Hi, everybody. I'm Peg Chumley. I'm a real alcoholic. And I don't know where this is going tonight, because I don't know how you talk and what you say to 8,000 years of sobriety. Oh. And Rob gave me a real compliment when he said I was a little nervous. There's a couple of things tonight. Yesterday, before we came down here, I went by one of the people I sponsor's house. I went by there because she wanted me to come before I came down here. And I showed her this rig that I bought. And there's a story behind that, too. But I said, because she was just with us last week at another roundup, and I said, now, am I going to be a cheap imitation of Joanne McClellan or what? And she said, or Juanita Wessel. So, but I've got a list of instructions up here that I got up with yesterday and was waiting for me from John, because this is the first time I've ever been here that he wasn't here. And this is a real special place because this is really where it started us. This was our first roundup, and it started us on such a journey with each other. But he couldn't be here, and he sends his love. And what it says is, relax, have fun, share your story, enjoy yourself, which I will after this is over. Be with friends and enjoy Allison. You see, there's another gift that I've got tonight that you made possible, and that's that our youngest daughter drove up here from Atlanta to share some of this weekend with us. And I'd like y'all to meet Allison, our youngest. That's the benefit of staying, one of the beautiful benefits of staying sober. And I tell you that I'm a real alcoholic because it's important for me to know that. And all I would have to do would be to read you the first paragraph of chapter 3, and I wouldn't have to tell you anything else, because the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. And that says it all for me. And then it goes on to describe the real alcoholic. And I pray to God that I never forget that. And I'd like to thank Jim and Bob for asking me to do this. 6 weeks ago, I was begging my sponsor to let me call and cancel, because right now I'm not in the best place of my recovery that I have been in the past 10 years, and I'm not sure that I had anything to come up here and share. And I think maybe what was happening is I was trying to think what I was going to tell you about being sober, and I forgot the very basic thing that I've been willing ever since I came in to do what you asked me to do, and that's been the foundation and the success of my sobriety today. And I know that I may not say anything at all up here tonight that makes any sense to any of you all, but maybe somewhere I'll hear what I have to say and have to start walking it. Well, I'm going to try to do what it says in here and what Tony just read, and that's share with you in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I hope I don't spend too much time being drunk, because being sober is really a whole lot more fun, and that's what I'm a whole lot more interested in today, so I'm going to try not to do that a whole lot. But I've got to qualify a little bit and tell you that I'm a member of the Middletown Sunday speaker meeting at home. And it's a sweet little meeting, and it's the best meeting on the planet. And if you're in the Louisville area and want an early Sunday meeting, It's out in Middletown, and it's easy to find, and we'd love to have each and every one of you. My sobriety date is November the 28th, 1982. And I just found out tonight that Kevin and I share the same sobriety date. That's awesome, you all. That's not coincidence. I know that. Kevin and I were in a meeting last night together, and I was sharing, and Kevin came and shared with me for a while this afternoon, and that's not the only thing we share. We share a whole lot of the same feelings and the same experiences. So that's another gift that you all gave me by coming back to this mountain. You know, I've experienced the love of this mountain and the recovery. And then I get to go to Alabama and experience the spirituality and the peace of that valley down at Sumatonga. And then because of those two, we've got a little roundup around home that we can go and share the joy and the freedom just to be with each other. And it's because that roundup came from these two. So I better talk about me now, I guess. I'm 47 years old. I get to be that for about another month and a half. And I'm telling you, I'm feeling every day of it too right now. And I've got four brothers. I'm the second of five children and four brothers. So growing up being different wasn't any big deal to me. I mean, I was just different. I was the girl. And there was never any quarter given because I was a girl. They really didn't like to play tea parties and dress up, and so therefore I didn't either. And to be any kind of have any kind of companionship, I learned to run and jump and climb trees and play ball and hunt and fish with the best of them. But something happened when I was growing up, and I got a message that in order to be as good as those boys, I had to be better than. And so I did everything a whole lot, and that's still with me today. If I like it, I do it a lot. I don't want just a little bit of anything that's good or that makes me feel good. I want it all. And that started back then as a kid. And I don't know, and my parents didn't tell me that. My brothers didn't tell me that. I hear things different. I still do today. I hear things different. I told my mom one time, I said, I don't know what it is about me, but if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. And that's just, but you know, it's serving me well today. It has served me very well for the past 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm convinced that's one of the reasons I'm sober today. Because you said, if you will come and if you will do Alcoholics Anonymous the way you drank, you've got a chance at a life that is just beyond anything you could ever dream. And they didn't lie to me. They didn't lie to me 10 years ago, and they haven't lied to me yet. So I'm glad about that in some ways. Now, I had a good childhood growing up, and I had a hard time with that when I came into the program, because I heard all these reasons to be an alcoholic, with abused children and divorced families and terrible experiences in school. I didn't have any of that. My mom and daddy loved me. I know they did. They used to tell me I could be anything I wanted to be. And when I got here and heard all that, I thought, well, I didn't have any excuse to drink. And so it reinforced the feeling that I had when I came in, that I was bad and that I was wicked. And it took me a while to hear you say, no, you're sick. So growing up, I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, and the people I ran with didn't drink. So I didn't have any occasion to either drink or not drink. And so there's no drunkalogue there, but I will share with you my first experience with alcohol. And that's when I was about 13 or 14, between my eighth grade and going into high school. My older brother's 10 years older than I, and he had two or three children by then. And they had this fancy dinner party at their house one night, and they had me there to chaperone their children, and everybody else brought their children. And they thought, since I was getting ready to go to high school, this Catholic Girls Academy, that it was time for me to get some sophistication about myself. So they thought that it would be okay if I had a drink. Now, alcohol was in my home. My mom and daddy would share a beer in the afternoon before, while mom was cooking supper. I never got that message, but they would do that. So alcohol, you know, I was around Catholic growing up. You're around alcohol. But that night, Charles and them, they were fixing gin bucks, and they thought it'd be okay if I had one. Now, I can tell you that I drank. I don't know how much I drank, because I only know what happened. And that was, in the middle of the night, I woke up violently ill. And I don't think I did much chaperoning, but I was just so sick. And I got up and made it to the bathroom, and I never did learn to throw up quietly. And I was in there just making an awful racket. And my brother came running down the hall, and he said, "Peggy Jo, what is wrong with you?" And I knew what was wrong with me, but I knew if I told him that I had drank too much, I knew I would get a whipping, because there wasn't child abuse back then. My daddy just whipped you with a, you know, if you acted up. I mean, there were limits and boundaries when I was growing up. So I knew, and I didn't like consequences even at that young age, but I knew I would get a whipping and be grounded for the rest of my natural life. And so it did not take me nearly as long to tell him what was, as it's taken me to tell you the thought process I went through. And I said, "It must have been that blue cheese dressing." And he said, "Well, for God's sake, don't ever eat that stuff again." And I didn't till I was about 3 years sober. And it was a real, I mean, that was a deal when I ate blue cheese dressing and didn't throw up and cause a terrible ruckus. But I remember thinking that night, and I don't know how I remember this, because that's a long time ago. I just told you how old I am. But I remember thinking, when I grow up and when I get big and when I drink, this won't happen to me. Because I saw my mom and daddy drinking, and I didn't see them throwing up. I saw my brother drinking. I saw him get a little tipsy and have a good time. I didn't see them in there and hugging that toilet. But it did, and I thought there was some kind of magic to that when you got to be 19, 20, 21, that you'd drink and just, you know, everything would be cool. Now, let me tell y'all something. I didn't drink for the next 4 years in high school, didn't have any experience with it. When I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous in November of 1982, after about the third meeting I went to, I came home one night and I said, "John," I said, "this is wonderful." He said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, they're going to teach me how to drink right." He said, "What?" He said, "Whoa." He said, "I don't think that that's what they're about. But why do you say that?" And I said, "Well, they've got all the experience in the world, for God's sake. I thought you all had some secret, and you were going to finally let me in on how to, because I didn't dream that you all were living and laughing and loving and having all this fun, and you weren't drinking somewhere. I just thought you figured out how to drink and not get your butt in trouble like mine was continuously getting. I was still looking for the formula to put it together. Because I guess I heard the message along the line in school or at home that if you practice something long enough and hard enough, you'll get good at it. Well, I married right out of high school. I worked a year and got married. And that marriage lasted 7 years and produced two beautiful children. Well, I thought he was a lifeguard, so I thought he could teach me how to drink right. And that was only one of the many things I failed in that marriage. But then after we divorced, I met John, and he wore a three-piece suit and carried an attaché case and drove a Buick. He was hot. He was just really not, you know, he was hot stuff. And he drank. When he would drink, he'd say, "Let's have a cocktail." Well, that sounded real grown up, and that sounded real sophisticated. So I thought he could just teach me how to drink like a lady, because I knew that the way I was drinking was not, it wasn't right. but I couldn't put my finger on it. I kept thinking, I got to get to this magic formula. So John and I married, and we were literally off to the races. He had two beautiful daughters by a previous marriage, and I've got the Tony and Tracy, and we were setting out on the All-American dream, you all, because it never crossed my mind that when I grew up and got through high school and got a job and got married, and then I'd get divorced and, you know, walk off into Alcoholics Anonymous la-la land. That was never part of my long-range plan, believe me. So John Chumley could drink a lot. But I thought, well, I'll just keep up with him and I'll learn how to drink right. Well, he tried to teach me and telling me to eat this, don't eat that, and it just got kind of nuts. But what I didn't know until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and he got to Al-Anon, every time he drank, he got enough. And he would quit drinking in the middle of a party, in the middle of a picnic, in the middle of the night. He'd switch over and start drinking Coke or tea or ginger ale. I never knew that. I thought he was drinking all this time, and I was. So I remember one time my mother said to me, she said, "Peggy Jo, you drink more than John Chumley." And for an instant, I thought, yes. I was so proud of that because, well, to me, that was an accomplishment. I didn't know how dangerous it was. Well, but what happened is it got out of control real quick on me. And it got to the point where we didn't know what I was going to do. It just, like the big book tells, it just got real unpredictable. I might be able to sit down and have a couple of drinks with you and just have the finest time you ever saw. But then I may go to the bathroom and see a bedroom, you know, in somebody's house and just go take a nap. Well, you know, one time we went out to dinner and I went to the bathroom and about 45 minutes later I came back. I had one of those jumpsuits on and got it down and couldn't get it up in the back, and it was a mess. And I came strolling through this dining room. It was a nice hotel down in my coat, and we couldn't figure this out, where all this stuff, because it seemed like whenever I drank, most of the time there was a chaos and an upset. Well, I'm going to get on now. If y'all need to know any more about that, we can talk later, but I really do want to get to recovery because that's what's so important to me today. And I want to get right now. Oh, I forgot to tell you about when we got married and went to the races. Went to the Kentucky Derby, and that was the first time. We've been married since May of 1974. So that's another miracle in this recovery deal. But we went to the Kentucky Derby for our honeymoon, got married on Friday, and the next day was Saturday, and had a nice box, and everybody's getting dressed up. I mean, we didn't do that infield number. We got all dressed up and had our flask, and I said, "Now, what time are we going? You know, need to be ready." They said, "Oh, we'll go out there about 2 o'clock in the afternoon," and I said, 2 o'clock? And I don't know if there's any other, if you all alcoholics did this or not, but I wanted to be there about 30 minutes before everything started. I was always wanting to be the, I want it all, and I was always the last one to leave. But they said 2 o'clock. I said 2 o'clock in the afternoon. My God, the day's shot. They said, "Oh, no, we'll be going to a derby brunch and all this kind of stuff." So I thought, well, that was okay. So we did that, and we got out there. Well, the derbies run a little after 5, and we had been drinking all day. And by 5 o'clock, I got up on this rail. Now it gave me a real appreciation for these gymnasts that do that horse thing, that bar thing. But I was on this rail and it was like this, and I had a foot planted and John was holding on to my legs and I had my drink, and it was a wonderful, I mean, you all know already, I think you're getting the idea how emotional I can be. And this is sober, and when those horses came around that first turn, I mean, it just came up in me, and I got so excited, and I went, oh, and I started screaming, and this drink went all over this lovely lady. About reminded me of Fran, you know, somebody like Fran from Lexington, Kentucky, in this next box. Well, her husband did not think that that was cute, and we apologized, and John was, you know, trying to wipe her off, and he said, we'll have the dress cleaned, and the guy was mouthing, and finally John said, well, we'll buy the dress, you know, whatever it takes, just let's, well, finally, after I got down, I looked, and John was taking his coat off, and about that time, here comes three security people who had seen all this happening, and John's brother was kind of taking his arm and saying, I don't think that's how we want to end this day up. So and I was really very sorry that that had happened because I didn't intend for anything like that to happen. And by the time we got from our seat, after security allowed us, how it'd be in everybody's best interest if we went ahead and vacated the premises. By the time we got to where we were going to queue up to get on the bus, I had it all turned around that it was that old man's fault. If he would have just shut his mouth, and if he would have accepted our apology and let us get the coat and dress and the whole thing cleaned, that whole ugly scene would not have occurred, never once being able to focus that if I had not been drunk, that the whole scene would never have occurred. So that's kind of what I did when I drank. That, and I lied a lot. So that's just kind of what happened to me, some of the things that happened to me when I was drinking. And I'll tell you what, the hardest work I ever did was being a drunk, an alcoholic mother, and an alcoholic wife. I was an alcoholic in the home, other than when I went out and drank. And I'd do that a lot after work at parties and all. I was not there emotionally for my children, and there's some of my children's real early years that I don't remember yet. Maybe God's going to see fit if I stay sober long enough to reveal that to me later on, if it's important for me to know. But that's a deep pain that I still carry when I think of that. And I really owe those children a deep, deep amend, and I try to do that every day by not making that amend by not drinking today. I'm going to get us on up to November of 82. One night in the middle of the week, John said, do you want to go to Nancy's? That's his sister's house, and she lives about 2 minutes from us, and I was delighted. Because by this time, we didn't take me very many places because, like I said, we didn't know how I was going to behave. And we went on, and by this time, I was really lying a lot. I had to. I don't know. That went with my disease. By this time, I was drinking my bourbon and iced tea. So that when he said, well, what are you drinking? I can say iced tea. And it wasn't a whole lie. Now, you all, that made perfect sense to me, that because I wasn't raised to do what I was doing, and I was drinking every day. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I was falling down drunk every day because I wasn't. I really loaded up on the weekends. I thought, that's, you know, I can do that. That's what you do on the weekend. But during the week, I was drinking every day. So that night, I'd had a couple of before dinner, during dinner, and he said, let's go. So we did. And we walked in her house, and Tracy was with us. By that time, Tony had left home, which was not a pleasant thing to live through, but it was necessary. But anyway, we went out to John's sister's, and we walked in, and everybody's glad to see us, you know. And she said, well, Peggy, do you want a drink? I look back on it, and they ask us the dumbest things. Do you want a drink? Why did you drink so much? Can't you do right? Why does all this have to happen? But she asked me that, and I said, well, sure I do. And I don't know about you all, but I wanted to fix my own. I didn't want somebody else messing with it. And I fixed that drink, and we went in, and we were talking, having a lovely evening. And I finished that drink, and I got up, and I went out to the kitchen, and Nancy went with me. And I said, you know, I want another drink. And I said, I want to get drunk. And I thought, who said that? Because I would never tell you that I got drunk. I'd tell you that I got tight, or that I got tipsy, or that I got loaded. But I'd never tell you I got drunk. I was 38 years old. I had two children. I had this nice home in the East End, two cars, a full-time job. That is not the way I was raised. But that night I said that word, and she said, well, there's the bottle. So I fixed another drink and went in and sat down and got that drink about halfway down, and something happened. I got this physical reaction. I don't know. Maybe that was a spiritual way. I don't know. But my tongue got real thick. And I knew what I wanted to say, but I couldn't say it. It wouldn't come out. And I got slurry, and I was sloppy, and I was kind of weaving a little bit. And I looked over, and I saw that look in John's eyes one more time. And I thought, oh, I've done it. I have finally done it. This is it. So I saw four of everything. Now, I had heard of double vision, but I am one grandiose, if you can't tell it from this out, I am one grandiose alcoholic, I can tell you that. So I saw four of everything. And one of him got up to take me home, and we got that kid in the van. And like I said, we weren't very far from home at all, and I prayed. And what I prayed was, God, don't let him be at me tonight. Because it seemed like he would want to have these meaningful conversations about what we were going to do with the rest of our life and why I couldn't do right. Why did I do the things I do? He would want to have those conversations right before or right after I got my head out of the toilet. And I have never been at my most brilliant moments right before or right after I got my head out of the toilet. And now the next day at 2 or 3 o'clock, I could think, now, well, why didn't I say this to him? You know, I was real brilliant after the fact, but never at that time. I couldn't compete, and I used to think, boy, this guy is so smart. I am just not nearly as bright as he is. I couldn't measure up in any area. So I knew that was going to be one of those nights he was going to say, don't you think we ought to talk? And so I prayed all the way home. I said, dear God, please don't let him be at me. So I ran down the hall. Tracy went to her room, got the headphones on, which was her normal thing. She didn't want to hear it. And I thought I was safe. And he comes in and flings that door open, flips that light on, and says, don't you think we ought to talk? And I thought, why don't we just put this on tape, plug it in, it can go, because it never changed. That, don't you think we ought to talk, never changed. Why do you have to drink so much? Well, I didn't think I was drinking that much. It just never occurred to me to have a couple of drinks and stop. It still don't occur to me today to have one drink or two drinks and stop. But he would say those things, and I'd say, I don't know, I didn't mean to, and I really didn't. But I embarrassed him, and we'd go through this scene. So I reared up in bed, and I sat up, and I'm giving it, you know, do you know what it feels like when all you want to do is be left alone? Just turn the light out and leave me alone. But I had to act sober. Now, I'm telling you, that's what I mean when I say the hardest work I ever did was being a drunk, alcoholic wife and mother, because there were a lot of times when I had to act sober. And well, in my mind, I did. Well, maybe John needs to tell you all about this, because he probably knows the whole truth. But in my mind, I pulled it off on more than one occasion. And this was one of them that I didn't, but I was weaving there and talk about what? And he said, about the way we're living. And I started bawling, and I said, I don't know where this came from either, you all. I said, why can't I drink like everybody else? Because I didn't see everybody else. I didn't see what the things happening to them that was happening to me. And about 2 weeks before this, we had been with his mother and his family. And the next day, I was on the phone with his mom, and she said, how do you stand that rotten, no good SOB? And she did not spell it out. And this is his mother, not mine. And I said, what do you mean? She said, he doesn't have a good word for you. He doesn't have a kind word for you. And I said, oh, that's just his way. He doesn't mean anything by that. That's just him. And I knew that wasn't. Because I knew that I was dying inside. And that we were really, really far apart. But I tried to blow it off like I did everything else. That night, I said that, why can't I drink like everybody else, and why can't we live? And you know, I said, I guess we're going to get divorced. He said, well, I don't know. He said, I know it doesn't have to stay this way. And I knew then that meant divorce. He said, I'm going to call Betty. And that was this gal that he had worked with in the hospital. He was in the personnel field in one of the hospitals up home, and I can remember him coming home and talking about this nurse that they snatched off the floor and sent her off to Minnesota, and this manager, or, you know, this cleanup person they found with alcohol and sent off to treatment. And I heard all these terms, but then I never did see these people again when we'd go to company functions. And of course, there was drinking and carrying on, and I wondered where they all went. Because they went off and never came back. And I never saw him. And when he said that, I thought, my God, he's going to send me somewhere. He's going to put me somewhere. And I thought, I'm not that bad. I went to work every day. Now, I had a lot of on-the-job absence. I don't know if you all did that or not. But I would be there barely able to fumble through. And sometimes I wasn't able to look so good when I got there, and my hair would be a wreck, and my clothes would be rumpled, and my boss was a germ fanatic, and he'd come in, and he'd say, what is the matter with you? Oh, I've got the flu, I've had diarrhea, my throat is killing me, and he'd say, well, go home, and I would, but I didn't count that being absent, because I made the supreme effort, if you know what it's like, and I think there's probably one or two who do out there, to be so hungover you don't know your name, to get up and try to get some clothes on and get to your place of employment. And just praying all the time, you know, that nobody, you know, gets too close. So I was in trouble in every area of my life. But anyway, that night John picked the phone up and called Betty, and I blubbered out something, and she agreed to meet me, or she asked me to meet her for after lunch on the day after Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving was a week earlier than it is now, and I did, and we went to Friday's at home. I don't know, Friday's is a real, real nice place, and when I got there, the waitress came over, and she said, well, would you like something to drink? Now, I'd tell you all in a minute that I didn't drink during the day, and I really didn't, other than on the weekends and holidays and vacations, and I thought that everybody drank. You know, I used to, once in a while, I'd go out at lunch at work, and everybody'd be drinking, and they'd all want to go back to work, and that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard of in my life. And it got to be too hard, and this was a sign, and I didn't know it, but it got to be too hard for me to drink and then have to stop and go back to work. So I thought, the waitress said, what do you want to drink? And I thought, well, I'll wait and see what she drinks, because we'd been drinking with her. And she came in and she ordered coffee, and I nearly choked, and I ordered Coke or something. I'm still not a great big coffee drinker, but she started telling me about alcoholism and about that it's a family disease, and I said, wait just a minute. I said, you surely don't think I'm an alcoholic. And she said, oh, Peggy, that's not, I can't say that about another human being. And I said, well, I can tell you why I'm not. And I listed, I mean, I was a woman, and I was Catholic, and I was 38. I mean, I knew where the alcoholics were. They were downtown under the bridge with the trench coats and the brown paper bags. That's what my vision was. So she said, you don't have to decide that right now. And She was telling me about her daughter who had gotten sober and what a time she had had, and Betty was in Al-Anon. And in the middle of this deal, she said, do you think y'all would like to go to a meeting tonight? And I said, a meeting of what? She said, oh, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, oh, there was that word again. And I said, oh, I don't think so. I said, we don't go very many places anymore and work hard and all this kind of stuff. But she was one of those that, you know what it's like when you got a wet one and you got one and you just kind of, it's really fun to stay sober long enough to do it to somebody else. I tell you, that's wonderful. You just kind of dig in, you get in with all, and that's the way she was doing. I mean, it was like she was coming in for the kill. And I thought, well, I'll make up something because I'm going to be here for the rest of this Thanksgiving holiday if I don't say so. And so I said, well, I'll ask John because, I mean, we had to have his permission. We were joined at the hip, and he had to take him. I was his responsibility. And he let me know that on more than one occasion. And so I said, oh, I don't know. I'll call you later. But I said, you need to know something. And she said, well, now what's that? I said, we're not joiners. And I said, you know, by this time I quit going to the PTA and just none of that was what I was wanting to do. And by this time we had these punishments. I don't know if y'all ever had punishments, but my punishment was on the weekend when we would have the children. And if y'all don't think, I really truly believe that some Al-Anons get sicker than the alcoholic, but my punishment was that after an evening of drinking, it was my job to get in the car and drive 7 miles to pick the children up from the movie or from the skating rink on back roads, not highway, but back roads, windy roads, very dark. That was my punishment for being drunk, and we did that on more than one occasion. And I'm so fortunate and so grateful tonight that God took care of me back then even. So anyway, I got home, and I had a beer after I got home because, boy, I needed it. And one of the first miracles happened. John came home early from work. Now, at this time, he stayed at work just as long as he possibly could and came home, and there was as little interaction and as little communication as possible. But he came home and he was smiling, and he said, well, how was your lunch? And I said, oh, John, it was so weird. I said, she's talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism. And he said, oh. I said, she wants us to go to a meeting tonight. And he said, well, what time and where? And I looked at him and I said, you think I'm an alcoholic? And he said, well, I can't say that about another human being. Now, I don't know any other organization that has its own buzzwords as much as Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. I didn't know that 10 years ago, but I know that today. Now, John swears that the first meeting that he went to also was that Friday night with me. I hope he gets totally honest one of these days. He was sneaking Al-Anon in some way. I don't know exactly how, but so he said, what time and where? Well, it didn't even dawn on me what I was going to. I mean, go sit and be with a bunch of drunks. I was so delighted to get out of the house on a Friday night. I got dressed up. And I thought, well, we're going out. And we got there to this church and walked through the kitchen. And I saw the biggest coffee pots I have ever seen. I mean, I didn't know that they made coffee pots that big. And you walked in and this smell just about knocked me down. And I looked, and there was all these cookies sitting around. And I thought, what is this? Coffee and cookies on Friday night? I'm 38 years old. I'm Catholic. I don't drink coffee and eat cookies on. I didn't do that a long time ago, you all. And here we were, and everybody was clean, and everybody smelled good. And they were all glad to see each other. And we were walking around, and I mean, I've heard people say, oh, I felt like I was home. Well, I didn't, you all. I'm sorry. I was so uncomfortable. And what I was uncomfortable about was how good you all were. And I kept looking for the alcoholics. And I said to John, I said, where are they? When are they going to bring them out? I thought if we have to drink all this coffee and eat all these damn cookies and they don't, you know, we're going to be here a long time. And I thought they must be back in some other rooms drinking or something. That's where I wanted to be. I didn't have a clue. Now, you know, I hear a lot now about Alcoholics Anonymous and about Al-Anon. And maybe there was a lot of that going on then, and I just couldn't tune in. Maybe it's because I'm tuned in now, but I knew nothing about this deal. And I don't know if there's anybody new out there tonight, but I'm going to tell you something. The longer I'm here, the less I know about it. I kept thinking, and I think that's one of the problems that I've been struggling with back home. I figured somewhere, if you had 10 years of sobriety, that you got some sense along the way, and you could figure some of this out. And I'm telling you, that hasn't happened for me. Because the longer I'm here, the less I know. And I'm back to real basic stuff. I'm back to not drinking, going to meetings, reading the big book, and talking to my sponsor. And that night started us off on a journey that has just been incredible. And they read out of the big book of alcoholics. They read out of the big book. They didn't say Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book. And they read these 12 steps and 12 traditions. And I'm going to tell you where my mind went. I tell you, I hear things different. I thought, I heard all that. And I thought, well, I've never heard of that in the Bible. Where is that in the Bible? Well, now think about it. First off, Catholics aren't big on the Bible. I'm the first one to admit that. But we've got 10 commandments, 8 beatitudes, 7 deadly sins, 12 tribes. So 12 steps and 12 traditions made sense to me. And I thought, oh my God, this, what have we walked into? And then to cap it all off, this guy gets up and he tells this story about divorce and jail and wrecked cars and maybe another divorce in there, and everybody's laughing. And I'm thinking, there ain't nothing funny about this, because I was too close to the pain, see? But what I did like was, I wasn't sure that they could tell if it was me or John. Because, well, you know, I finally learned, you all told me enough, if you can't tell him, you can't smell him, and that sometimes he acts pretty bizarre. But that was the one thing that I did like. Well, somebody gathered up all this literature and asked us to please keep coming, to come on back, that they needed us. And I thought, uh-huh. I saw them doing all that hugging, and there was a lot of stuff going on back then I thought it was Hare Krishna. I'm just going to tell y'all, I thought it was a cult, because you couldn't have been that together and all that. So we went home that night, and John said to me on the way home, he said, did you feel the love in that room? And for him to feel that, he felt it. I didn't. Because I knew that if you knew the things I had done and the way I'd treated my children and the lies I was telling and the things I was doing outside my marriage vows, I knew if you knew those things, you wouldn't let me come back. And I knew that there was no way that I could get as good as you were. Everything happens right on time and in God's time. And I know that tonight. You know, that night started such a journey. And I'm so glad I stayed sober long enough to experience you all, because I know I'm better today because of you all. I got to meet Jim and Mickey, and I got to read the traditions one time at a big conference when Jim Hawkins was the speaker. And that first time we came down here, I cried to about Elizabethtown, because I knew I'd never get to see you all again. And I loved you so much. And I wanted, you know, I knew I had Bob and Juanita at home and Roe and all that, but I wanted you all too. I wanted what you all had down here. And lo and behold, here we are tonight. I know today, and one of the very few things that I do know today, is that when I get on the other side of whatever it is God's got me, my little growth experience, I know when I get on the other side, I can look back and see God's hand in it and not doubt it. What I'm praying for today is the ability that when I'm going through the difficult times and the pain, I want to be able to feel that faith when I'm going through, that it's going to be okay when I get on the other side. I'm tired of the fight. The kind of spirituality that Juanita's got, and that Mickey Hawkins has got, and that George Montgomery, you all have taught me so much. But I'm not there yet. I want 30 years of sobriety right now. Take on it. I want it. It's not fair that I have. You all have done it all. Why can't I just come on and have that with you right now? You know, I always say there's a couple of things I want to stay sober long enough to do, and that's to automatically tell the truth and to look forward to doing something like this. And I don't know how long that's going to take, because to this day, and I know that I've got to be rigorously honest, but it's hard for me at that moment when my back end is on fire and when I, you know, and I've got the decision to make of whether to lie or tell the truth. I wanna get there where I automatically tell the truth and it's not, well, is this worth lying about? I don't know if that makes any sense or not. And I don't know, but that's what I want to stay sober long enough to feel and to be able to do, you all. Several years ago, I got a new sponsor. She came to Louisville from Denver, and she was involved in service. And she was about 16 years sober, and I thought, she needs a challenge. This gal talks a good deal. Last May, she just celebrated 20 years, so I guess I wasn't such a big challenge. But I met with her, and she sponsors different. I was sharing with somebody last night or today or whenever it was. She expects me to get well. Can you imagine? But what she's done is she's helped me so much to get there. She's got a spiritual program that's second to none. And when the first night I met with her, and we went out to eat, and we were talking, and I was telling her how I do things, and about all this, you know, that when I drank, I did not sit in the corner and drink. And somehow when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't sit in the corner and get sober. I didn't see the people that were sitting in the corner that had what I wanted. It was the people who were right in the middle of it, making it happen. And they got me in there before I knew what happened to me. That's how I'm up here tonight. At Sumatonga in May, Bob and Jim came, and each one got me on. They were on either side of me. And it was like, come on, Peggy, we want to talk to you. And there I go, just like a lamb to slaughter, you know? That's what I say about even hanging around here as long as I have. I should have known something was up. And they asked me to come and do this. Well, I couldn't even, what do you say? You know? And I did something pretty normal. I just busted away and ran for a minute and went out in the other room and cried. That was not new. But I said, do you all know what that is? Do you know what that month will be? That's going to be my 10-year anniversary. That's my 10-year birthday, you all. And Monteagle's where it started for us. Do you know how special that is to this alcoholic? And it really is. But that night with my sponsor, well, she had to find out about me before she agreed she would. And I was telling her all this stuff, and she said, well, Peggy, you're just a mad dog alcoholic. That's all right. Now, I'd been that took me right back to the night that John and I were in a joint meeting and he said something about his alcoholic. Now, he had called me a lot of things when we were drinking, but he had never called me his alcoholic, and I wasn't sure I liked the sound of that at all. Because that really sounded big. That sounded so final. I don't know, but then she's sitting there telling me I'm a mad dog alcoholic. And I said, well, I don't know if that's what it is or not, but I want good, solid recovery. I need some help. I need some help to get back in the steps. And by this time, I had been real active in service, and like Ro said, at the group level, and I went on and I went and did some area level, district DCM and secretary and treasurer. And then at 8 years sober, working with this sponsor and God, I got the message that maybe I ought to go to school, because I've always felt less than because I didn't have any college. And the children, the girls were in school, and one is getting ready to graduate, and Allison was still in doing really good, and I really felt less than. So I talked to my sponsor, and she said, well, just check it out. So I did, and I found out about this private school up home, and I went, and I signed up for one class. I said, I'll do this. I'll try this one time because I'm 45 years old, and I'm going to school and work full-time and all this. I don't know, but I figure I'm 8 years sober. I can handle this. And God, it's like God was nudging me. You know, I was praying all the time. Well, it's a real intense and real accelerated program, and you take one subject a month, and you keep on going. And I did that school just like I've done everything else. Flat out. All the time. I made really good grades and didn't take any time off until this past May. And took May off and then had some real intense back-to-back classes this summer. And this is when my discontent started, because I was doing it on I never missed my home group. I will admit, I was very faithful to my home group. But maybe I'd make another meeting, one meeting during the week. And I thought, now I'm 8 years sober, I can do this. I talked to my sponsor every day. I picked up the times that I was talking to the people that I sponsor. But what I also did was I said, now, God, I've got a really full boat, and I can't mess with anybody brand new because I don't have the time to give a brand new alcoholic. And I had never told God that. I'd always been willing and open when somebody came into my life, and I thought, you all taught me that none of that happened by accident and God was doing all that, but all of a sudden I'm telling him what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. And I think that has a whole lot to do with where I've gotten blocked lately. And my relationship with John has changed, and it was a gradual, subtle thing. And that's another thing that I didn't want to come down here, because I see you all walking hand in hand. And he and I used to. And we're kind of growing in different directions right now. And I guess maybe I needed to come back down here to get a dose of how to do it together again. But it scared me, because I thought you all would say that I'm not walking my talk, and it's been so important for me to do what you all have been so willing to do and to share. So when I prayed tonight, when I went and forgot my big book, and Allison ran and got that for me, and I went back and went in that bathroom and got down. I mean, when I heard Jim Hawkins with 800 years of sobriety say that he gets down on his knees before he does this, I had been doing that, but that affirmed that it was real good for me to do, and I still do it. And what I asked was for God to just let me tell my story and let me say one thing that would make one other alcoholic want to go to another meeting and maybe want to stay sober one more day. My son is 27 years old, and He's been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know where he is tonight. Well, he's at home. He's in Louisville doing his thing. He had 6 months of good sobriety and then went back out again. And I didn't get real upset about it this time. Because what God said to me was, Peggy, you don't be shocked, don't be surprised that anybody goes back out anymore. And I used to, I'd say, God, how could anybody give this up? The surprise and the shock and the glory and the miracle today is that any of us managed to stay sober another 24 hours. And where I am with him is, if he can get 6 months here and 3 months there, that's better than none, and he knows where it is. So I would ask you all to please keep him in your prayers, and I'd ask you all to keep me in your prayers, because I prayed for you all this morning, and what I prayed was for God to get everybody who was coming here real safe and to let them have a real good weekend of sharing and love and to be able to go home, like Kevin said, with more than I brought. And I know I am. I'm going back because I'm going to take you all back with me. And I know that it's going to be better. And even if it's not, I'll be better because I've been able to share with you this weekend. I love each and every one of you all. And I'm glad this is over with. Let's have a good roundup. I'm Peg Chumley, and I'm a real alcoholic.